Thank you for all that you've been giving us. Thank you for giving us here ears to hear. And we just pray that this simple message would be have an impact in our lives. Amen. There's not a great conspiracy by the missionaries or leaders to plan and go into cahoots so that we could all be on the same page. Thursday morning, I was seeking God, and as I read in my devotional time, God gave me a message. And I don't usually put a title on my messages, and I didn't put one on this, but if I had, it would have been simple. Arise and go. And I'm going to share that message. Let's look at in the book of Acts, chapter 9. God uses human instrumentality to move us. God speaks to us, and He intervenes personally in many ways, but we also must recognize that He also uses people. He has people speaking to our lives. In this particular case, we have Jesus speaking clearly to Paul. And Jesus does one of those strange things. He's almost like he's cryptic sometimes. He just tells him, go into the city, arise and go, wait there, and you will be told what to do. Don't you just hate that? Don't you? I mean, don't we want everything sort of spelled out so that we can at least know what's going to go on? Recently, I had a bad experience. That bad experience was because I heard, I think it must be Proverbs 35 or 36, verse 3 or 4. Have you read that verse? No. It's that famous proverb that says this: blessed is a man who has all his ducks in a row. Have you read that one? Peggy and I live in a culture that's different, because we buffer between Latin America and the United States. And as I have taken Jose Luis around, we have had to buffer a lot. Because you don't realize it, brethren, but you live in a culture that is very event-oriented. And in many churches and many groups, the list, on the top of the list, as far as the great arbiter of life's decisions is, you have all your ducks in a row. Satan has worked in our culture to plant seeds generationally. We move slowly in the wrong direction because Satan is a great strategizer. And most of us have seen that over the years. How the drift goes from where things are pretty good to things are horrible. We had some folks down in Mexico from a Christian college nearby. And I was astounded to hear their position now concerning homosexuality. I was astounded to hear how they used that famous line now that's very common. Well, what's the difference between homosexuality and divorce? Well, a few years back, the issue was divorce. And we sort of give it a little bit, and now it's homosexuality. And divorce is used as a justification for this. The next one will be bestiality. Isn't that true? Isn't there? There's no stop to the direction and the excuses that are made in the culture. Well, our culture, brethren, has been arranged by a grand strategizer who has been working to cause our value systems to change subtly and slowly. The result is we don't even realize that the underlying values have changed so drastically that we have what I am calling skewered spirituality. We have skewered spirituality because we are starting to drink into the culture that's around us and buy into what they have to say. One of those great values that's out there, and it's not such a bad value. I mean, there's some truth to having your ducks in a row, but it's become too strong. So recently in dealing with the church, the bad experience that I had was this. We were promoting some projects in Mexico. And I believe that we were on the right track. But I also realized that we don't have all of our ducks in the row like most churches would want us to have them placed. And their answer to me when they said they chose to be involved in a different project was, well, Larry, it's they just had their ducks in a row and you didn't. And I thought, okay, the decision-making process is this. Not what God's will is, not seeking God in prayer and arriving at a conclusion, it's simply this. Proverbs 36. By the way, it doesn't exist. Blessed is a man who has all his ducks in a row. Brethren, we are not going to have all of our ducks in a row. Acts chapter 9. I would like to talk about the instrumentality of man in Paul's call, and also how Jesus' disciples. Chapter 9. We're going to jump into the context here. It's when Paul is spoken to by Jesus as he's going on the road to Damascus. We'll pick it up in verse 4. And he fell to the earth and heard a voice saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And he said, Who art thou, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And he, trembling and astonished, said, Lord, what wilt thou have me do? And the Lord said unto him, Arise and go into the city, and it shall be told thee what thou must do. Why didn't that great communicator, Jesus Christ, just tell him the whole story? Why not? Would have saved a lot of time, and he probably would have gotten it better, more clear, more concisely from Jesus' lips. And think of the authority that Paul would have had behind him to have said, Jesus personally told me A, B, C, and D. Why did Jesus do it that way? Well, one thing I believe is that Jesus is still discipling people. And he's discipling Paul from the very beginning. And one of the things we have to be discipled in, brethren, is that we need to just do the next assignment. Now, this is key, because we're not going to have everything spelled out before us. But it's very important that we have an understanding that God has a next assignment for the church. When we do not have a next assignment, we become immobilized. I have a little bit of a soapbox because I believe that young men today are being made passive by the culture that's around them. Young men are being taught to be cool, chill out, not rock the boat, be mellow, be reflective, be effeminate. Be, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but I think you get the idea. When men should be different. I love to see how Jesus confronts and deals with things in the Word of God. I love his terminology. I like it when he tells people you're great. When it says Jesus was displeased. Now, being displeased is not bad. But today we're taught that anybody who shows displeasure is bad. You want to pat everybody on the back, don't you? Isn't that the spirituality that we hear today? And then that verse later on says, and Jesus was greatly displeased. I would love to see Jesus be greatly displeased. And he was very spiritual when he did that. We need to be displeased by what's going on around us. We cannot be passive as we see things happen. We lost a girl in our church who committed suicide. And I'll tell you why. We pat people on the back too much, and we don't deal with issues. And she had issues. And she needed to hear something about it. This soapbox that I'm on has to do with the skewered spirituality that the culture is producing around us. I could apply it to many things, but tonight I just want to look at this skewered spirituality that Paul had. I believe that Paul was, if you looked at Paul's life, at this moment in time, he would fit all the qualifications for a very spiritual man according to his culture, according to the Jewish culture, wouldn't he? He was zealous. He was completing all the rules and regulations. He was under authority. He was doing all kinds of things that, according to the appearances, looked like they were great and they were very religious. But he was completely wrong. Because his skewered spirituality was drawn from the arrangement of things around him. That skewered spirituality that Paul had to be knocked out of him. He had to be confronted by Jesus and begin to look at things differently. Dick shared this morning about the importance of rethinking everything. I believe that's a good word. I believe that's a good word for the church, and I believe it's a good word for the leadership. All too often, the value system that's around us grows until we just rest and rely upon it. And if you are resting and relying on the fact that having your ducks in the row is the most important thing on your list, then we need to be unskewered. We need to be made straight and not crooked in the way we view things. Arise and go into the city. Simple instruction. Next objective. He didn't tell him the whole thing. And it shall be told thee what thou must do. We need to have our hearts ready to just arise and go to the next assignment. The next assignment is the spiritual assignment. Oftentimes we think in these romantic spiritual terms, and we're way down the road. I think Dick alluded to that this morning about the tendency of missionaries to think about the work and not work through their families. Isn't that the same thing? And when we are not overly romantic about what the work is, and we work in pragmatic ways, and our work is found right next to us, then the next person, the next assignment, is exactly where God meets us. God meets us not in those things that are far away. He meets us in provision right in the next step of obedience. We do not want to become immobilized. I have been there. Immobilization is not good. Passivity in young men is not good, and it's tied to being immobilized. So just go to the next assignment and it shall be told thee what thou must do. And the men who journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice, but seeing no man. Many people who are around you who are not being called singularly will not understand what you're doing. Count on it. And the men, and verse 8. And Saul arose from the earth, and when his eyes were opened, he saw no man, but they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. And he was there 3 days without sight, and neither did eat nor drink. And there was a certain disciple at Damascus named Ananias. And to him said the Lord in a vision, Ananias. And he said, Behold, I am here, Lord. And the Lord said unto him, Arise and go. Actually, this thing works all over the place, doesn't it? For Paul, the arise and go was in a different context. But for Ananias, their disciple, it was the same thing. Arise and go. Go into the street which is called Straight, and inquire in the house of Judas for one called Saul of Tarsus. For behold, he prayeth, and hath seen in a vision a man named Ananias coming in. Do you see what's happening there? There's something beautiful here. And the beauty of this passage is that God knew Ananias. He trusted him. Because if you pay close attention, see, before God talks to Ananias, he's already given Paul a vision in which Ananias comes and talks to him. Isn't that neat? That wonderful sense of confidence that God had in Ananias, knowing that he's asking him to do a hard thing, isn't he? But even before he asks him, he gives Paul a vision. Isn't that wonderful? And hath seen in a vision a man named Ananias coming in and putting his hand on him, that he might receive his sight. I love Ananias' reaction because he is authentic and unvarnished in his spirituality. I think it's great when we make mistakes. I do it all the time. It's good because we are human. And we go through problems and we mess up. And sometimes we forget our notes. And sometimes we translate incorrectly. Sometimes we're on the wrong page. Aren't you glad that no one's perfect? And that in this life that we live as Christians, God has chosen to use human vessels to accomplish His purposes. God chose the instrumentality of Ananias to confirm His word. And I believe that today, God is choosing to use the instrumentality of humans in all our frailty also to speak and to confirm what God has already spoken. Do you know what I'm saying? God has already been speaking to some of your hearts. And as you come to this conference, what is happening is, through human instrumentality, God is confirming that which is already being spoken to your heart. And we can trust that. Then Ananias answered, "Lord, I have heard by many of this man how much evil he hath done to the saints in Jerusalem. And here he hath authority from the chief priests to bind all that call on thy name. But the Lord said unto him, Go thy way, for he is a chosen vessel unto me to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the children of Israel. For I will show him how great things he must suffer for my name's sake." Ananias simply shared his perspective. He was very human in that communication, very weak, very normal, and Jesus answered his questions. Our skewered spirituality is too professional. Our skewered spirituality is too ducks in the row oriented. We need to cultivate a hearing ear and a quick response so that we're able to arise and go. This summer, I went through some real difficulties. My wife and I returned to the field after a time of furlough here in the United States. And as we went back to the field and continued moving ahead in some projects, one of our home churches moved off to become more progressive. That's a nice way of saying more liberal, but I don't think it's any better. It became more progressive. Then, as we went back to Mexico, the church that we had helped establish became more traditional. So we had things going opposite directions. And I was reminded of our dear friend Larry Montgomery, who one time fell off a roof, hurt his leg. I think he's still suffering. And he and the Ben Fellowship shared this analogy that has always stayed with me. It's a great analogy. Here's the roof in Bend, fairly steep, Bend, Oregon. It's winter. It's slick. When you're on this side of the slope going up, Satan is over here trying to keep you on the lascivious side of things. He will do everything he can to keep you from getting up to the top. That's how he works. You finally pull your legs and hands out of his grasp and you make it up to the top. And instead of pulling on you, he just starts pushing. Starts pushing so that you can head down the other side to legalism. He doesn't care if it's legalism or he doesn't care if it's lasciviousness. It's all the same to him. So I was in this thing where these guys are going more progressive and these guys are going more traditional. And Peggy and I were saying, we feel like those sparrows on the housetop that sort of look sad. And then the kids identified with that one. Boy, that's good. And in the middle of that, there were lies and other things that were going on around the ministry, and it was tough. During that time, we realized we were in the foxhole. We were like those soldiers in Bastogne at the Battle of the Bulge who just needed to hold the line. And they did. That was our assignment. But I was struck by the attitude of those soldiers and their leadership. The leadership to encourage them just to be faithful to their assignment, whether that assignment is moving on or holding the line. And that was our experience this summer. And I believe that because of that experience, some of the things that I'm sharing here have more richness and freshness. Because when we pass through difficult circumstances, and we know we're there because God has called us to be there, all the difficult circumstances that are around us then work together to make life more precious, more beautiful, and more rich. I would not substitute the things that I received from the Word this summer for anything. They're rich and they're beautiful. When I was in Tonalá this summer, I was thinking, well, we really haven't done that much. We have a few disciples. Numbers aren't that great. There's difficulties and troubles. And I was really being hit hard. And there was a man in the city of Guadalajara whose work was really growing. Numbers, finances, charisma. He was helping a church in Tonalá. And I was really getting hit hard by the adversary. I was seeing what was going on there. And then my son Joel came to me and said, "Dad, there's a guy in the Bible churches that has fallen into sin." He didn't tell me who. A few days later, he said, "It's that guy. And he's been living in adultery for 11 years. And I said, "I understand, Lord. That's skewered spirituality. Sure, you can accomplish a lot of things, but it's all going with human resources." And so I looked back and I thought, all those numbers, all that money, all the quotes, good that was going on, it couldn't have been done by the Spirit. It had to have been done by the flesh. And I was deceived, along with a whole congregation of people. And I began to meditate on the truth of the fact that oftentimes we have skewered spirituality, different idea of what's spiritual. So I just wanted to share that with you. I wanted to encourage you to take the next steps. And as Jesus speaks to your heart, and some of you are being spoken to, right? Put a little finger up and I can see you, okay? Arise and go to your next assignment. You don't need a lot beyond that. Some have already talked to me about going to Morocco. I'm excited because some are going to arise and some are going to go. We would like to encourage you to continue to pray for Jose Luis and Julie as they return to Morocco on the 11th. I have some prayer cards for them, and I would like to give those prayer cards to people who would commit themselves to, on a regular basis, to pray for the work. So if the Lord is tugging in your heart to do that, then I'll just leave these up here. And then at the end of the service, just come up and take one. God will know who you are, and you just pray for them as you remember the work there. And also, this whole thing about human instrumentality, we believe that short-term stuff is good and career stuff is great, but we need to have intermediate steps, and we're trying to do that. We believe that that's part of our human instrumentality as missionaries, is to create slots. Jose Luis will be creating slots for people in Morocco. We have a need for an administrator in the business. We also are creating slots in Mexico for 1 month terms in July and in January. So if you're interested in coming to Mexico, not for just a short-term thing, but for a month of intensive work, we're working that way. And then we would also encourage, I just have some ideas about how we might think outside the box in training concerning Mexico. And I want to talk to Jim and talk to Dick about some some possibilities of co-laboring, because I think that all of us were called to work, and many of us were not equipped for battle in the cold. We were equipped. But we learned what it's like to work in the cold, and we've been through the foxholes together, and there's a camaraderie there. And I think that the things that some of us, we have learned over the period of time, will really help us. I think we need to prepare a new generation and prepare them also to fight the battle in the cold, in the dead of winter. And that's specialized training. So that's part of our heart. Thank you.